has supposedly intersected with our reality. And reality is the right term, because this is the deal. All you know is what you know. There's a whole bunch of other stuff out there that you don't know. If you don't know about the other stuff, then you're ignorant of those facts. But it's not even a willful ignorance, because it's just that we don't have a way of examining, detecting, being part of these things, even though these things are interwoven with us in this world, everything that we know. And not just this earth. I'm talking about all known matter. So matter is stuff that's there. It's tangible, you know. Then you have a whole bunch of other bits that are not. And then you have wave particles and things like that and whatever. And then if we start talking about quantum physics, which we're going to talk about later on, it kind of reverses, you know. So I'm going to read from an article, actually, because this guy is interesting. And I'm local to Cornell University, so, you know, and I used to go, when I was down in the city, I used to always go to the University of Columbia, NYU, whatever, when they had anybody who is into space show up. I'm not a sci-fi guy. I'm a science guy, you know, but I like to think outside the box. This is why the people that I admire, even like Carl Sagan, who really thought outside the box, and he wasn't your standard physicist, you know, thinking that there's no such thing. You know, I had an argument one time, a debate with a physicist. She was from China, going to Cornell, got her degree at Cornell, and I'm talking about tachyons. And she starts, oh, no, no such thing as tachyons. Ha, 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 laughing in my face like I'm an idiot because I mentioned the word tachyons. But it's a theory with a lot of scientists out there, and I am not a scientist. I'm a backyard scientist, you know. So it's a theory with a lot of scientists out there that there are tachyons, which are subatomic particles that can travel faster than the speed of light. So if your limitations is the speed of light, then you're going to be extremely limited, because that's just one thing out of all the things in the universe of constants. And even the word constant isn't constant, because there is no constant. That's why you can't look at these things we're going to talk about. You can't look at dark matter or dark energy or you know, antimatter or any of that with a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 approach. You have to know that one day you're going to tune in and see a 5. You know, one day you're going to tune in and see a 7. One day you go tune in, you're going to see a -9. You know, it's like that. So this dude thinks that the alien life, his theory is kind of like my theory, but my theory more relies on a system. His more relies on a life form. My system relies on many life forms. Anyway, let me read this. All right. Alien life is behind the mysteries of the universe, according to a radical new theory. Ancient non-human life forms morphed into the physical world and are the driving force behind mind-boggling quantum physics and phenomenon like dark matter, according to a Columbia University astrophysicist. The experts say our universe is the remains of intelligent alien life that controls all aspects of the physical world, from gravity to the speed of light. The theory helps to explain the great mysteries of the cosmos and also answers why we have yet to find intelligent life beyond our planet, Professor Caleb Scharf says. In an article for the science journal Nautilus, the radical thinker wrote that alien life could exist in the behavior of subatomic particles and the expansion of the universe. Perhaps hyper-advanced life isn't just external. Perhaps it's already all around, said. It is embedded in what we perceive to be physics itself. In other words, life might not just be in the equations, it might be the equation. He points to a theory that suggests alien life forms intelligent enough to reach us will have already turned themselves into living machines. Humanity, too, faces this prospect when our creations overtake our own intelligence, a point of singularity. Taking this a step further, Sharp says, hyper-advanced aliens may have gone beyond turning themselves into machine creatures and gone as far as becoming a complex physical system. If you're a civilization that has learned how to encode living systems into different materials, all you need to do is build a normal matter to dark matter data transfer system, a dark matter 3D printer, if you will. This theory centers around the idea that we have not seen complex life apart from our own because it already exists around us. We don't recognize advanced life because it forms an integral and unsuspicious part of what we've considered to be the natural world, he wrote. So really, you're talking about some matrix type of, this is a computer program type of thing, but in a deeper realm, you know. And my theory on physics, because we know about the micro level of physics. We know about quantum physics. We don't know much about quantum physics. Quantum physics is interesting stuff. And that's just one level, like our level, the macro level of physics, of what we know as our own realm. But we live within the speed of light. And there are people that had theories that nobody can go past speed of light. Einstein's theory of relativity, right? But these were people, you know, don't get me wrong, Einstein was a pioneer in science, still to this day. But he's not 100% right, because you really can't be. You know, it's something that is different all the time, and something that we can't comprehend. There may be patterns there, but we don't know that, because we're humans, and we're at a limited level right now. So we can't see these patterns. We just know that there are elements to these things that exist, and then a whole bunch of questions of why. You know, why this, why that, why the other thing? These are scientists who get paid a lot of money to sit there and come up with these theories. So my theory, all right, I'll share this with you. My theory is that there's also a mega level of physics. And it doesn't end there. I think that from macro, you can go down to micro, you can go up to mega. You have all these levels of different ways that things work that we may not understand, period, end of sentence. So in quantum physics, it's not unusual to hypothesize that you could walk through a door and walk halfway across the universe, not get into a ship, not travel into space in a ship, in a suit, but literally taking 5 points of space, you know, the place you're going to, the place you're coming from, and then putting yourself there. In quantum physics, you can do that. It breaks apart in the macro world. But it doesn't mean that we can't harness quantum physics, does it? So let's talk about dark energy and dark matter first, okay? In the early 1990s, one thing was fairly certain about the expansion of the universe. It might have enough energy density to stop its expansion and start recollapsing, right? It might have so little energy density that it would never stop expanding, but gravity was certain to slow the expansion as time went on. So you know that the universe is expanding, because scientists say the universe is expanding over our observations on light that shines down on us that could already be gone. You know, light from billions of light years away. That it take all that time for the light to get here, but the original object that gave off light could be gone. You don't know. Because we can't see it in real time. We can look out into the sky, but everything that we see is something that has traveled to us. All that light in of itself. We're not looking at celestial bodies. We're looking at light traveling to us. You get what I'm saying? So the universe is full of matter, and the attractive force of gravity pulls all matter together. All right? In 1998, the Hubble Space Telescope observations, they were observing a very distant supernova that showed that about the density and all that, which was a long time ago. You know, I'm talking about the one that happened. The universe was actually expanding more slowly than it is today. So the expansion of the universe has not been slow due to gravity, as everyone thought. It has been accelerating. Nobody expected this. No one knew how to explain it, but something was causing it. So already, we have one problem. Why is it, you know, obviously these guys don't even know what they're thinking or talking about, because all of these are is guesswork, educated guessing. So if the universe is accelerating, what's it accelerating into? And then, if it's expanding, what's it expanding from? Something that we don't know, that we can't see. All right? Eventually, theorists came up with three sorts of explanations. Maybe it was a result of a long-discarded version of Einstein's theory of gravity, one that contained what was called a cosmological constant. Maybe there was some strange kind of energy fluid that filled space. Maybe there's something wrong with Einstein's theory of gravity, and a new theory could include some kind of field that creates this cosmic acceleration. Theorists still don't know what the correct explanation is, but they have given the solution a name, and they call it dark energy. All right? So what is dark energy? More is unknown than is known, you know? And that kind of puts them on, these scientists, on a learning curve. They're doing an investigation, like what I do for a living. They're doing an investigation. They're doing the tests that are limited to them, these humans on Earth, limited to them, to test out in space these theories. Which is really hard, you know, because we just don't have the technology to do this. You know, we have telescopes. We have radio telescopes. You know, we have some probes that are out there. But we don't have what we need to really observe what's going on. There's just no way around it, right? And maybe that's for a reason, right? So we know how much dark energy there is because we know how it affects the universe's expansion. Other than that, it's a complete mystery. But it is an important mystery. It turns out that roughly 68% of the universe is dark energy. Dark matter makes up about 27%. The rest, everything on Earth, you know, the things that you can observe with instruments and that type of thing, things that are tangible that you can reach out and touch, you and me and all that, that's all called normal matter, right? That adds up to about 5% of the universe. So imagine a universe. You have 100% of this unbelievable expanding universe, right? And like I say, it's expanding, but it's expanding into what? If something expands, it needs to expand into something. Otherwise, you're stuck. You hit a wall. But then if you hit a wall, what's on the other side of that wall? So maybe these universes, and plural universes, are expanding into one another as dimensional energy. If you start thinking with dimensional energy, then it could go on and on and on and on and on indefinitely, infinity, literally. And that's how I see space. That's how I see the universe, infinity. But as people, as humans, we want to know what's the rhyme or reason for all of this. I mean, you live your life, you have your quality of life, there's things that you like, things that you don't like, things that we got to do, things that we don't have to do, that we like to do. But we can fix that on this earth, even though we're on a ball that's flying around the sun, right? That's floating around the universe. I think we're going 187,000 miles per hour, something like that around there, right now, on this earth. So, yeah, you want a sense of security, keep your home secure, and whatever. It doesn't change the fact that we're on a little planet flying around a fireball out in deep space. So, obviously, there's a bigger purpose. We're not just fleas on the dog, because what we're talking about tonight here is energy. And whether it's martial arts, whether you're ghost hunting, whether you're looking for UFOs, all that is energy. All these things have to do with energy, you know? So if you're talking about people from other planets, yeah, it depends on how big the universe is, you know, that we're talking about, which is pretty damn big. Of course there's going to be other life out there. If it's advanced life, and our life on this planet is fairly young. And I mean fairly young. And I'm seeing that 35,000 years ago, rhesus negative came into our blood. And all scientists agree it came from somewhere else. So let's get rid of the idea that humans are millions of years old. Let's say 35,000 years old. Imagine cultures, though, that are millions of years old. And those cultures could have merged with their machines of their creation, you know? Or they could exist on energy levels that we don't understand. Things that aren't, you know, flesh and bone that we are, obviously. So if they exist on these levels, they could be in front of you, you wouldn't know it. All right. So dark energy. One explanation of dark energy is that it is a property of space. Albert Einstein was the first person to realize that empty space is not nothing. Space has amazing properties, many of which are just beginning to be understood. The first property that Einstein discovered is that it is possible for more space to come into existence. And one version of Einstein's gravity theory, the version that contains the cosmological constant, makes a second prediction. Empty space can possess its own energy. Because this energy is a property of space itself, it would not be diluted as space expands. As more space comes into existence, more of this energy of space would appear. As a result, this form of energy would cause the universe to expand faster and faster. Unfortunately, no one understands why the cosmological constant should even be there, much less why it would have exactly the right value to cause the observed acceleration of the universe. So check this out. I'm into Taoism in a big way, and a long time ago, it basically had called to me, and I get it, you know? And it's not a religion, it's a philosophy, but people try to make it into a religion, all that. In the Tao Te Ching, the things that, especially in the beginning, the first few poems you read, you realize that Lao Tzu is talking about this. It's talking about dark matter, dark energy, antimatter, energy. It's not just an assumption of like, wow, you know, so let's just make a comparison between this poem and all of this science. It was actually the Taoist alchemist that invented medicine, that got into all that deep stuff, even with stars, astrology, the whole bit, Chinese astrology, which I'm really into. So we can make comparisons to past civilizations and the things that they talked about and then the things that they observed or had known about or had prior knowledge of, all of this information we're talking about right now. All right. So another explanation of how space acquires energy comes from the quantum theory of matter. In this theory, empty space is actually full of temporary virtual particles that continually form and then disappear. Bang, like magicians, right? It's there, it's not. It's there, it's not. But it's got to be there somewhere. It's zipping off to somewhere. I was hanging out with Carl Sagan's father-in-law. We were talking about space and all that, and you know, I had NPR on the radio station in the background, and these scientists had just made a discovery on transferring light from one radioactive cloud to another without moving it. Amazing. That's amazing. You know, it's the basis of some kind of transporter. It's the basis of a doorway. This is stuff that we're into now. This was several years ago, 10 years ago, 11 years ago. But this is the stuff that every, you know, and think about it, every 10 years, look at the technology. So that was 10 years ago. What about now? All right. So when physicists tried to calculate how much energy that we're talking about virtual space and all that, how much energy this would give empty space, the answer came out wrong, and wrong by a lot. The number came out to be 10 to 120th power. And they said that was too big. That's a one with 120 zeros after it. So it's hard to get an answer when something is that big. So obviously, the mystery continues. Obviously, they don't have a way of measuring. You know, it's like when you use the old personal calculator and it goes too high, bang. Trying to calculate your debt. And it hits that little E. Really? So that's just another piece of the puzzle, right? That something is there, and you know that something is there, and you try to prove something is there using sticks and stone, basically. You know, because we're cavemen as far as that's concerned with this technology, right? So another explanation of dark matter is a new kind of dynamical energy fluid or field, something that fills all the space, but there's something whose effect on the expansion of the universe is the opposite of that of matter and or normal energy. Some theorists have named this quintessence, after the fifth element of the Greek philosophers. But if quintessence is the answer, we still don't know what it is like, what it interacts with, or why it exists. So, the mystery continues. A last possibly is the Einstein theory of gravity is not correct. So then, the ruler that you're using is not right. It's wrong. Then you have to start basing all of your investigations, all of these scientific investigations, as just different classifications, you know, and trying to be comparative. I do that with ghost hunting because there are no rules in ghost hunting. There's a couple of things that are common amongst investigations, but every investigation is different. And you're investigating energy, right? And people that you feel have passed on. And then they're still there in some type of form of energy. And they can transmit that vibration to you. Because all of physics, all of this, are vibrations. Right? So, if Einstein's theory is not correct, that would not only affect the expansion of the universe, but it would also affect the way that normal matter in galaxies and clusters and galaxies behave. This fact would provide a way to decide if the solution to the dark energy problem is a new gravity theory or not. We could observe how galaxies come together in clusters, but if it does turn out that a new theory of gravity is needed, what kind of theory would it be? How could it correctly describe the motion of the bodies in the solar system, as Einstein's theory is known to do, and still give us the different prediction for the universe that we need. There are candidate theories, but none are compelling, so the mystery continues. The thing that is needed to decide between dark energy possibilities, a property of space, a new dynamic fluid, or a new theory of gravity is more data and better data, which they don't have. Okay? What is dark matter? Let's get down to dark matter. By fitting, and I want to talk about dark energy for a minute. Imagine, let's put dark energy into a better understanding. Imagine right now, dark energy is controlling us. It's going through us. It's the particles. These are subatomic particles that we can't see or hear or touch. They're traveling so fast, they are controlling our reality. And our reality is within the speed of light, not outside of it, but within it. So all this dark matter, they're saying, where is it? Where is it? Let's find it. Where is it? It's everywhere. Dark energy, everywhere. Dark matter, everywhere. Because if you look at the Tao Te Ching and you look at yin and yang, and I know that some of you might be a little off on the ancient Chinese stuff, but that's that counterbalance. It's a universal symbol for balance. And you need that balance in the universe. Every move has, or every action has a reaction. You know? So let's talk about yang. Yang is the force that we move with. So maybe that's dark energy, right? And yin is the force that allows us to move, allows us, our matter, to move, to be what it is. You don't have one without the other. Because without that dark matter, without that dark energy, you have chaos. You have particles that aren't clinging together, and not because of gravity, because when you look out in space, what's holding these solar systems together? What's the glue? The glue is dark matter. The glue is dark energy. All right, so what is dark matter? By fitting a theoretical mode, model of the composition of the universe to the combined set of cosmological observation, scientists have come up with a composition that we describe as, you know, we talked about earlier, 68% dark energy, 27% dark matter, 5% normal matter. In this realm, let me add that. In this realm. So what is dark matter? We are much more certain what dark matter is not than what we are, what we think it is. First, if it's dark, meaning that it is not form of stars and planets that we can see, observations show that there is far too little visible matter in the universe to make up the 27% required by the observation. Second, it is not in the form of dark clouds of normal matter, matter made up of particles called baryons. We know that we'd be able to detect baryonic clouds by their absorption of radiation passing through them, right? Third, dark matter is not antimatter because we do not see the unique gamma rays that are produced when antimatter annihilates with matter. So, and that's interesting too, because I've seen these, you know, about the Hadron super collider and other super colliders, and how they're collecting antimatter and how they have to store it. It's really unstable. They have to store it in a magnetic field because obviously if antimatter touches matter, you have a huge explosion, a lot of destruction, right? So finally, we can rule out large galaxy-sized black holes on the basis of how many gravitational lenses we see. High concentrations of matter bend light passing near them from objects further away. So gravitational lensing is a tool that the scientists have been using to measure this dark matter because light bends around it, right? So at this point, there are still a few dark matter possibilities that are viable. Baryonic matter could still make up the dark matter if it were all tied up in brown dwarfs or in small, dense chunks of heavy elements. These possibilities are known as massive compact halo objects, or MACHOs. But the most common view is that dark matter is not baryonic at all, but that it was made up of other more exotic particles like xeons, or what they call WIMPs, weakly interacting massive particles. Antimatter is the opposite of normal matter. More specifically, the subatomic particles of antimatter have properties opposite of those of normal matter. So, you know, now we start getting into this crazy antimatter for matter conversation. I don't know if you remember back in the day, Star Trek, when these dudes would come out of the past, and one guy was made of matter, one guy was antimatter, and if they touch each other, it'd be like, boom, all over, right? All right, the electrical charge of those particles is reversed. Antimatter was created along with matter after the Big Bang, but antimatter is rare in today's universe, and scientists aren't sure why. How about this? How about there's another universe made up of antimatter? And that's pretty easy to see as the way things happen in this universe. I think that we can assume that. Or you'll have galaxies made up of antimatter, right? To better understand antimatter, one needs to know more about matter. Matter is made up of atoms, which are the basic units of chemical elements such as hydrogen, helium, or oxygen. Each element has a certain number of atoms. Hydrogen has one atom, helium has two atoms, and so on. The universe of an atom is complex, as it is full of exotic particles with properties of spin and flavor that physicists are only just beginning to understand. So here we are, 2017, and they still don't know anything, right? So we're just not even crawling yet, but we have a long way to go before we're walking and running. From a simple perspective, however, atoms have particles that are known as electrons, protons, and neutrons inside of them. Antiparticles. In the heart of an atom called the nucleus are protons, which have a positive electrical charge, and neutrons, which have a neutral charge. Electrons, which generally have a negative charge, occupy orbits around the nucleus. So look, little tiny world, and you have your orbiting pieces, you have like a little universe almost in this little tiny itty-bitty speck of a world, right? The orbits can change depending on how excited electrons are, meaning how much energy that they have. In the case of antimatter, the electrical charge is reversed relative to matter. According to NASA, anti-electrons called positrons behave like electrons but have a positive charge. Antiprotons is the name, as the name implies, are protons with a negative charge. These antimatter particles, which are called antiparticles, have been generated and studied at huge particle accelerators such as the Large Hadron Collider, operated by CERN, which is the European Organization for Nuclear Research. Antimatter is not anti-gravity, though it has not been experimentally confirmed. Existing theory predicts that antimatter behaves the same to gravity as does normal matter. It makes sense. It's just the other side of the coin. If you want anti-gravity, then you have to have some kind of anti-magnetic device, right? And believe it or not, light can do that. Light. Because light is in waves. All right, let me continue on. Antimatter particles are created in ultra-high speed collision. In the first moments after a Big Bang, only energy existed. As the universe cooled, and this is, you know what, this is the first line of the Tao Te Ching. You know that? This is the very first poem about, I mean, if you read it, because it's really interesting how they just are parallel. So in the very first moments of the Big Bang when energy existed, as the universe cooled and expanded, particles of both matter and antimatter were produced in equal amounts. Why matter came to dominate is a question that scientists have yet to discover. See, it didn't come to dominate because energy doesn't just die out. This is why people keep going on. And it doesn't die. It transforms. It goes from one form to another sometimes. Sometimes the form maintains. But energy doesn't die out, so that antimatter went somewhere else. It may not be here that we can see it, but it went somewhere else. So one theory suggests that more normal matter was created than antimatter in the beginning, so that even after mutual annihilation, there was enough normal matter left to form stars and galaxies and us. But why would it, unless it was someone's grand plan? This just happened by accident? Right? It's just like, boom, there's the universe. You know, like, just like that. Something had to have started it for a reason. And as we see in nature, we can look at the smallest nature on this planet and know the universe. And even though there are different dimensions, even though there's different types of physics, energy, and all that, all are related in a little way of just how if you make observations of nature and you see just like how the seasons happen, you know exactly that there's patterns to things, okay? Antimatter was first predicted in 1928 by English physicist Paul Dirac. And that's not true. That's the first hornet. Antimatter was first predicted by Lao Tzu a couple hundred years before Jesus Christ. So, okay, but this guy got published, I guess, and that's the difference, you know. Same for Sir Isaac Newton and all that. Dirac put together Einstein's special relativity equation, which says light is the fastest-moving thing in the universe. It's not the only fastest-moving thing, because there are things that parallel light, like radio waves, which travel the speed of light. Light can be deflected easier than radio waves, which is interesting. So, but we all exist within light, but light is a frequency, you know? There's different types of light. Okay. In quantum mechanics, which describes what happens in atom according to... All right, let me skip this. Because I want to get on to this. This is just who claimed what, who got the Nobel Prize. I don't care any of that. All right, an antimatter spaceship, because NASA has a theory that they could make a ship and power it with antimatter, and they can just keep going and going. Apparently, if you have antimatter the size of a nickel, you could launch a space shuttle into space 30 times off that power alone. That's an unbelievable amount. There's problems with it that we're going to discuss, but interesting nonetheless. And it's a new technology to us. So when antimatter particles interact with matter particles, they annihilate each other and produce unbelievable amount of energy. This has led engineers to speculate that an antimatter-powered spacecraft might be efficient way to explore the universe. And that could be, it doesn't have to put people in there. You could put a drone, you know, and just have it go, especially if it could really move. The problem with space is you never know what's going to hit you that's traveling at 35,000 miles an hour. You know, it could be a rock the size of your fist, and that will destroy your whole world, you know, if you're a little shit flying up there. But it seems like drones are the way to go. Anyway, NASA cautions that there's a huge cash catch with this idea. It takes about $100 billion to create a milligram of antimatter. And the funny thing is they know that. Isn't that scary? That they know that. They actually know how much it costs to create a milligram of antimatter, $100 billion. So either they spent it already, or that's just what they're tallying up. While research can get by on a lot less antimatter, this is the minimum that would be needed for the application. To be commercially viable, this price would have to drop by about a factor of 10,000. Power generation creates another headache. It costs far more energy to create antimatter than the energy one could get back from an antimatter reaction. But think about this. Do you really want that type of power on this earth? Because, man, if something like that fell into the wrong hands, it would be more than bad, right? And on top of that, is it viable for space? Because if we start talking about cold fusion, then that's a whole other world. Then you're cost-effective and you're way beyond antimatter. All right. So NASA hasn't stopped looking for this technology, and then, you know, they think that in the future they can get it done, maybe 40, 60 years from now. So they're looking into the future. NASA created a 2010 report with the help from the Tory group, which is also a group interested in this kind of antimatter and collecting this type of evidence, as we could say, materials. They call the technology frontiers the breakthrough capabilities for space exploration, which has detailed how fusion spacecraft could work. The design calls for pellets of deuterium and tritium, heavy hydrogen isotopes with one or two neutrons in their nuclei. Unlike common hydrogen that has no neutrons, an antiproton beam would then be beamed into the pellets, which would bash against a layer of uranium embedded inside. After the antiprotons strike the uranium, both would be destroyed and create fission products that could spark fusion reaction, because you need fission to make fusion. Properly directed, this could make a spacecraft move. But also, as could a lot of stuff, right? Once your spacecraft is in space, you know, making it move, I think, is not as difficult. And it depends on how long this stuff can last, right? Because antimatter is unbelievably unstable. And I don't think they've ever made it stable yet. So we're talking about, I don't know, about 40 to 60 years, maybe 400 years or something like that. I think we can find better technology, especially if we start looking at quantum physics. Better technology that's more reliable. All right. So I mentioned quantum physics. Let's talk about it. First of all, what is quantum physics? Quantum physics is the study of the behavior of matter and energy at a molecular, atomic, nuclear, and even smaller microscopic levels, right? In the early 20th century, it was discovered that the laws that govern macroscopic objects do not function the same in such small realms. What does quantum mean? Quantum is Latin, literally means how much. All right. So if you want to look smart to your friends and start saying all kind of, you know, how do you quantify that? You know, someone's talking about, like, you know what I mean? How many hot dogs they have in the grill? You quantify that for me. How many hot dogs do you have, man? I guess you could use, like, if you want to be smart, talk about quantum physics, people are going to look at you like, what the hell are you talking about? I've heard of that. Yeah. Who developed quantum mechanics? God, basically, if you want to look at it like that. So as scientists gain the technology to measure with greater precision, better tools, better stuff, better technology, in general, strange phenomena was observed. The birth of quantum physics is attributed to Max Planck's 1900 paper on black body radiation. Development of the field was done by Max Planck, Albert Einstein, Niels Bohr, Werner Heisenberg, Erwin Schrödinger, and you know, the Schrodinger's cat, the whole bit, and you know, doing experiments and observing experiments, changes the experiment, all that. And many others. Ironically, Albert Einstein had theoretical issues with quantum mechanics. He didn't quite believe it. It was something that he couldn't touch. It was something he couldn't see. So he wasn't thinking outside the box. No. So he tried for years to disprove or modify the theory, which he could never do. So what's special about quantum physics? All right. In the realm of quantum physics, observing something actually influences the physical process taking place, like I just talked about. Light waves act like particles, and particles act like light waves. So this is called wave-particle duality. Matter can go from one spot to another without moving through the intervening space. This is called quantum tunneling. So matter can move instantaneously. Doesn't matter what's in between. That's incredible, right? And if you can harness that type of technology, you could do much more. Then you don't need a ship. You need a door. Right? Information moves instantly across vast distances. In fact, in quantum mechanics, we discover that the entire universe is actually a series of probabilities. Fortunately, it breaks down when dealing with larger objects, as demonstrated by Schrodinger's cat through experiment. Poor kitty. I'll explain to you like this. Because I know a physicist, and he was listening to one of my shows one time, and I had mentioned this, and he said it was the best explanation he ever heard of quantum mechanics, or quantum physics, which is cool, because I'm just a normal everyday schmo. And like I said, I'm a backyard of scientists, you know? Imagine, if you will, a realm that you're in. I'm in Ithaca, New York, man. This is where Twilight Zone came from also. We got Carl Sagan in Twilight Zone, and you got Michael Angley up here in the hills. So, yeah, definitely. Imagine you're standing there in your backyard, and you have a pencil in your hand, right? Now, that pencil is unbelievably long. Let's say infinity. And that pencil shoots off into the universe. And you're still holding it in your hand. That pencil has traveled billions of light years. And there's a person on the other side, on some planet, holding on pencil as well. You're holding on to it at the same time, yet separated by so much. So if you talk about instantaneously transferring information, let's take that light that they captured in a cloud, an atomic cloud, and let's put that out there 3 billion years from now in space and make a door. As long as you know where the hell you're going, as long as you know where that door ends up, and that's why you have to calculate that five-dimensional space. You need 5 points anyway, I should say. Because you have to calculate. Ever watch Stargate, the movie? You got to calculate where you're going. It's not just about where you're going from. You need to know, it's not the point of origin, you need to know where the hell you're going. If you look on YouTube, and I think a lot of them are bogus, but some of them are damn interesting, you see all kinds of weird energy stuff. You see, you know, like look like doorways open up and the spacecraft come through or people run through sometimes. You know, I know a lot of that is just crap on YouTube, you know, but there's a theory that you can create that doorway. You can. If you can do it, if you can harness those tachyons, which you're moving faster than the speed of light, depending on which direction you want to go, you can probably travel through time pretty easily by walking through a door, not by getting in some kind of spacecraft. You know, our flesh and bone reality is really limited. We are fragile little lumpskull creatures. For us to get physically into a ship, it's not like me getting in my Jeep and driving down the road. and you're getting into a ship, you're blasting off into space, and you want to navigate deep space, asteroid belts, junk floating around up there, whatever. Any of that could be your dismay. Any of that. So, hold on to your pencil instead. And you will believe where it goes. Quantum entanglement. One of the key concepts is quantum entanglement, which describes a situation where multiple particles are associated in such a way that measuring the quantum state of one particle also places constraints on the measurements of the other particles. So basically, there's just no known. There's no way to measure this stuff. Because by what you're doing, you're changing it. That's like trying to measure like what's going on, you know, how many gallons in a pool, or, you know, then you jump in and a whole bunch of other people jump in and it actually changes, you know, the depth of the water because of you. So, this is best exemplified by the EPR paradox. Though originally a thought experiment, this has been now confirmed experimentally through tests to something known as the theorem. Okay, quantum optics. Quantum optics is a branch of quantum physics that focuses primarily on the behavior of light or photons. At the level of quantum optics, the behavior of the individual photon has a bearing on the outcoming light, as opposed to classical optics, which was developed by Sir Isaac Newton. Lasers is one application that came out of the study of quantum optics. Quantum electrodynamics, QED, is the study of how electrons and photons interact. It was developed in the late 1940s by Richard Feynman, Julian Schwinger, Sinitro Tominaj, and others. The predictions of QED regarding the scattering of photons and electrons are accurate to 11 decimal places, which is a lot. Unified field theory, collection of research paths that are trying to reconcile quantum physics with Einstein's theory of general relativity, often by trying to consolidate the fundamental forces of physics. Some types of unified theories include what, and then some overlap. You know what? How about this? I think Einstein is a great man, and I would never take anything away from Einstein. I think that the technology and these theories are all baby steps, you know, because there's no, you can't just lock it in and say, okay, this is it, that's going to be that, it's a chocolate bar, I know how it's going to taste, I know how it's going to smell, it's going to be the same every time, even though they're all different chocolate bars. But not all chocolate bars are created equal, are they? So when it comes to the universe and studying the universe, it's the same thing. That things that are happening, you know what? That dark matter is expanding from itself. But where's it coming from? And what's it expanding into? All that dark energy that's streaming through the universe right now, it's keeping everything balanced perfectly well. If it wasn't, this Earth, everything else out there would be just a bunch of specks of crap floating around without any rhyme or reason. Maybe start circling other gravitational bodies, you know? So it really comes down to doing, you know, these scientists thinking. These are lead scientists. These are the scientists that are leading the field, and they don't know anything. They have theories, and they argue about each other with theories, but I think we just need to look to nature and understand that. And I think that we need to think outside the box. You know, when I first started ghost hunting, we hardly had any equipment to really try to communicate. Now there's a ton of stuff, because people in the field fine-tune things, because as they're doing investigations, they're thinking outside the box, and they fine-tune equipment for the cause. All right. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this little talk about all matter matters is what I call it. All matter matters. You know, dark matter dark energy, matter, antimatter, it's all good. You know? It's all good because it's what we do every day. Whether you know it or not, it's what we are. So, this is Michael Engel on Discovery Paranormal. I will see you guys next week on this show. Bye-bye.